Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Memorial Day. Happy Monday. Andrew, hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. We're going to talk about double or nothing tonight. But before we get into the wrestling, I have a quick story, which will explain also why we had no show last week, which was my fault.
Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah.
So, sorry, I thought I just shot everybody off there, but it looks like
that was a dramatic pause.
Yeah, that's always good. If you want to join the show, 515-605-9345. We already have someone on the line. We'll get the phone calls in just a minute. That's if you want to join us live. If you are joining us live and you want to talk Double or Nothing, great. 515-605-9345. Hit the number one. That tells us you want to get on the air. But we did have no show last week. We were going to preview Double or Nothing last week, but we didn't have a show because I spent my Monday last week at the After Hours Emergency Vet.
After hours,
yeah, with a sick dog, which tells you that immediately you're thinking, okay, the after hours emergency vet probably not going to be cheap, right?
Yeah,
right. So okay. I came home last Monday. We were getting ready to do the show, and I had a dog that was just laying on the floor, not getting up, couldn't get up. You know, was coming out the other end, and the poor thing, he couldn't even stand. So I said, something's wrong here. We got to go to the ER, the vet, the dog ER, the pet ER. And I had my son with me, my 13-year-old. So, like, you know, he's holding the dog. And it's his dog is sick. Like, we've got to help the dog. It's my dog. I want to help the dog. They come in after a brief minute and say, you know, this is, we don't know what's going on. We're going to test. We have to do all these tests to figure it out. Does that sound good to you? And I went, yeah, of course. Whatever you have to do to help, you know, my sick dog. Of course,
yeah.
You want to help your dog. And the doctor says, okay, I'll be right back. I'm going to send a tech in to go over it with you. I said, okay, great. Thank you. They come back in the room while my son is holding our dog, like, on his lap. And the dog's sick. And she goes, okay, the doctor wants to do, she starts naming all these tests and scans and everything else. And I said, okay, that's what he said. She goes, okay, so the total for that will be $1,850. We just need you to sign here, and then we can go ahead and do all the tests. And I went, I actually went, whoa. Like, I put my hand up and went, whoa.
Yeah.
What did you just say? She goes, it'll be $1,850. And I said, okay. I expected to spend more money because I'm at, you know, an emergency room vet. It's 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I did not expect almost $2,000.
No.
So I said, and they don't even know what's wrong.
Yeah.
And this is where I just felt, I'm telling the story because I feel like I was taken advantage of, and I'm trying to warn people. Okay. So I said, look, I go, I want to help my dog. My dog's sick. But, I mean, can we figure something else out here? Like, this seems kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, oh, okay, well, I'll be right back. Let me go see what the doctor thinks is necessary. Like, what are the tests we really have to do that's necessary? I went, oh, okay, yeah, let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start there. She comes back in, and they had the doctor thinks he needs to do the blood test, and he needs to do this and this and this. And it's going to come to, like, $415, which is still a lot of money.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
But more along the, I mean, a regular trip to the vet is a little, it's over $100. So
yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, I was expecting three-ish. So like four-ish was fine. Like I can at least wrap my head around that.
Mm-hmm.
So they do the test on the dog. They're okay. Your dog, they didn't, oh, that's the other thing. They do all their stuff and they don't know what's wrong. But here's, you know, three medicines to try and see if it makes the dog feel better. They give him an IV and all that other stuff. And luckily, as we're recording, he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
He's fine because we went to our regular vet the next day. But then as we were checking out, though, I just went, I got angry. And to the point where, like, I almost made a scene because I was like, wait a minute here. You were going to charge me $100 in things that you didn't think was necessary. Like, what are we doing here? Then you know, the next, they send like the report to our regular vet the next day. My regular vet calls me and says, hey, I see you went to the ER last night. Please bring the dog in. She does a couple of things. She does her own blood test and goes, you know what happened here? She goes, it rained on Saturday. The dog started getting sick on Sunday. She goes, it rained on Saturday. I said, yeah. She goes, do you get mushrooms? Like, we have a fenced-in yard, so the dogs go in the yard. Do you get mushrooms in your yard? I said, yeah, you know, when it rains. She goes, any chance your dog ate one of those? And I go, very likely, because he eats everything.
Yeah.
So she thinks he ate a mushroom and was, like, literally high on the mushroom.
Oh.
That's what she thinks happened.
So he was having a pretty good time then.
I had a picture because I was like, look at his eyes. And I showed her a picture of his eyes. And she goes, yeah, they're all red, but that's not like the whites of his eyes. Apparently dogs have like a third eyelid or something. She goes, those are like his inner eyelid or whatever. She goes, those clothes, like, he'll look like that when we, if we were to sedate him to do surgery. Like, that's what the type of look his eyes would have. So the first thing she asked me, she goes, I'm not judging. She goes, do you have any edibles in the house that he may have gotten into? No. She goes, and then she went on to the mushroom thing, and she was like, yeah. She goes, I bet he ate a mushroom, and he wasn't feeling anything. To the point that he's very skittish, very nervous. He's a rescue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this doctor was grabbing him, like, by the mouth and peeling up his lips to look at his gums, and he was just laying there, and I'm like, under normal circumstances, he's going to bite this guy's face off. Why is he just sitting here letting it happen? Yeah, he was probably high on a mushroom. So after all that, he was high on a mushroom.
Man, I'm just like, I'm still like, just stuck on, like, you almost like just threw away $1,400.
Well, that's the thing. Like, how many, and that's why, and that would be my warning to people out there that have pets, right? Like, how many people just go like, okay, whatever it is, I'll figure it out. Help my dog. Like, I'm not going to be like, you know what? That's a little too much. Guess he's got to die. Like, that's not – I'm not capable of doing that.
Right.
So it's like, you know, even if they came back and was like, no, this is what it costs. Given the condition the dog was in, I probably would have been like, okay, here's my credit card. I don't even know what to do. Because you just want – and then the conversation I had with our regular vet the next day, who's awesome, she was like, yeah. She goes, all those places, she goes, they default to – we're going to test for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we'll rule things out and figure it out. She goes, it's a profit-making endeavor.
Clearly.
You know, so basically she was like, look, in a life or death scenario, she goes, I would encourage you to go back. She goes, but if this were to happen again, just call me in the morning and you can bring him in and I'll see him. Because she's like a one-woman practice. It's like her and two techs, and it's a very small little place, but it's great. And she was like, call me the next morning. And she's like, you could have saved yourself a lot of aggravation. And, you know, I just spent $400. So she was like, you could have saved yourself $400. She just brought him in the next day. And that was something that aggravated me. It was like, all that money. And then they were like, we don't even know what's wrong. So, like, yeah, try this and see what happens.
I mean, I guess in a sense, then, it's like you now have $1,400 that could have been gone. So you should spend it on something fun.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe, just maybe. I mean, I could. Do you know how many Double or Nothing tickets I could have bought with that $1,400?
Well, I don't know if you saw online.
The get-in price was about 20, right?
Yeah.
So I could have bought like 700 Double or Nothing tickets.
Dang. I saw something online, and I don't know if this is true. This is like on Reddit, but they were basically like, buy a cheeseburger at this restaurant and you get like a free ticket. I don't know if it's legit or not, but.
I saw something similar. Somebody sent me a screenshot of something that was like it was like a four-ticket bundle for $40.
Dang.
So like $10 a ticket.
That's
and,
crazy.
And, I mean, the shots of the crowd, I mean, you could tell.
Yeah.
I don't know what the announced attendance was, but the arena was not – it didn't look even remotely close to being
full. It didn't look
good. It looked like they were heavily tarped up. I mean, and granted, that building seats like 20,000 people, right?
Oh, okay.
But – and I looked because they did T-Mobile last year. And they drew like 14,000. So I think it's like 20,000 that building sits, maybe 21. And I think MGM Grand where they started in Vegas seats like 11,000. So, but I wonder, like, why not just do the MGM? Like, I don't know what the cost is to rent T-Mobile Arena versus MGM Grand, but I imagine it's considerable. So, like, what's more profitable, 11,000 in the MGM Grand or 14,000 at T-Mobile Arena? I don't know the answer to that question, but I bet it's pretty close. Even though you're selling 3,000 less tickets,
yeah,
the cost of the rent being what it is, the fact that you could advertise it as a sellout, like, I think there's probably benefits to being like, look, we'll go to the slightly smaller venue and sell it out.
Last night after the pay-per-view, I watched, because I've ordered like pretty much every show on the Bleacher Report app. You can just like go back and watch stuff that you bought before. So I was watching, it was like their second pay-per-view ever, like All Out, August of 2019. And it was crazy how much better it looked back then, like on TV, because there was so many more people in the crowd and they were just pumped and the energy level was up. But yeah, just because they could shoot everywhere and you would see like the fans were filling up. Whereas like last night, they wouldn't have it not facing the hard camera because you could see that it was just empty essentially on that side.
Yeah, I saw, I don't know if it was Brian Alvarez, somebody posted a photo of Orange Cassidy after he won the Battle Royal. And it was basically, it was like two sections were tarped off.
Yeah. It looked like way Upper Deck was as well, which is understandable. That, I mean, it is for a lot of shows, but then there were definitely other sections that you could see that were empty, which, I mean, leads me to believe like they could be in trouble once they start doing these Saturday shows if they can't like sell out one of their five pay-per-views of the year.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we'll talk about the show itself as this show continues. We've got a bunch of emails from last week, which I, at this point, unfortunately, are kind of irrelevant because it was all talking about stuff that happened last week. We do got a couple from today about the show, and we do have at least, well, it looks like two callers lined up right now. So let's go to phone calls because I don't want the callers to wait forever. We'll go to calls. We'll then look at the emails and then whatever, because I'm sure the calls and emails are going to dictate, you know, topics of Double or Nothing. So I don't want to go over everything just yet and double back on stuff. So let's kind of go to phone calls first, then we'll go to emails, and then anything else that we missed from the pay-per-view we can work in after, if that sounds like a plan.
Cool.
All right, let's go to, let's see. 305 was holding the longest. So 305, looks like you called in like right as we started. You were on the horn tonight.
Hey guys, DJ from Miami.
How you doing? You must have called in like right when we started. You popped up on us right away. So you were like ready to go.
I had this weird question I asked Greg yesterday, but I go back and watch it again and kind of figure out why of all things that this is like something weird that I don't know if you ever seen this before, but two girls lost. Okay. The belt, you know what I'm saying? Like one lost the belt, one lost the mat. Like I'm confused, but nobody else lost the titles. Like, was that intentional? I don't know. Of all people, like, you know, they really were holding Cargo like really close, and she was doing okay, better, and all of a sudden, boom, she just lost. Like nothing. It was the weirdest thing, and I don't know if she's going to go do a movie or she's hurt or what, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure what Tony booking is. Why would he do that of all things?
Of Jade specifically, or having both women lose their titles?
Because they were holding her tight, but both girls, they both lost, and nobody else lost the belts. Like, what? Like, I'm just so confused. Like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
I'm just shocked. It's like, I've never seen that before, and, you know, especially in our pay-per-view, and that's like a one-time thing. I'm shocked on that one. I just can't figure it out. What is his booking on that? Why would they do that to Jade?
Yeah, the Jade one's interesting, Andrew, because I think most people expected it with Jamie Hayter because she was hurt, and that had come out before the show. She was dealing with an injury. So, I mean, I don't know if that was necessarily always in the plan for them to switch that title at the pay-per-view, but, you know, as of a couple of weeks ago when she got hurt, okay, now they have to.
Mm-hmm.
With Jade, I mean, that one seems like, you know, look, you didn't have to do that, obviously, if they didn't want to. So there's got to be something going on there. Maybe they just felt like it was time. Because it's been, I mean, we got to be going on almost 2 years, right?
Yeah, it's got to be somewhere around that time point.
So I guess the question then is, like, doing it when they did it, would you have waited to do it at a different time because of the fact that you knew you had to switch Jamie Hayter's title?
I would have, yeah. I think it could turn out okay. I'm not big on the move so far just because I'm so much higher on Jade Cargill. And I think Statlander, she was getting over better than she ever had before, shortly before her injury. But I still don't know if she's going to, if that's going to like sustain itself now that she's back. So I think it's an interesting choice. But I think it could end up being like a bit of a, you know, a bad move if, cause they invested so much in Cargill, but yeah, I would, especially since they had to, have Toni Storm win, I would have held off on switching the other titles. Cause then, you know, if you have both women lose, then it's just like, it's not a big news story for either one.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, DJ? Were you just against them taking the belt off of Jade altogether, or is it just more of the fact that they had to do two of them on the same show? Would you have waited to do the Jade title change later on?
Jade was coming up, and I really thought Jade, you know, they're really holding Jade, you know, really close, and I don't know. It's just boom. So I don't know if she's hurt or she's going to do a movie or something, because she was doing better and better each match.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could always tell a story of her trying to get the belt back. I mean, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if she's got some sort of outside project that she's going to work on or not. I mean, that would certainly be feasible. I mean, I know she's had some things going on outside of AEW. So, yeah, if she's got an outside project and she's going to be gone for 3 months, even though they've protected her, you probably don't want, you know, that belt going away for 3 months or whatever. So that's certainly possible. It's also possible that, look, maybe they figured it's time to do something different with her. And because of the fact that she's looked better and better, it probably means that they can afford to have her lose a match and because her matches are going to start getting better. So, like, they don't have to protect her as much because in the ring she's improving, if that makes sense.
Let me throw one thing in before I go to my next question. It's kind of funny how WWE loves numbers. Oh, Roman, 1,000, or the other girl, 400, and then all of a sudden, right before four, she lost. Like, what? Like, but then, you know, Jade is like, oh, yeah, she lost, whatever. She was a long time and she lost. It wasn't like, oh, my gosh, she holds this long, and I can't believe, no, she's lost. That was it. It was like, what the heck? You know what I'm saying? Like, you'd think that the numbers, they would love the numbers like the WWE didn't say anything about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's something where I think they've got to do a better job of leaning on that stuff, Andrew. I don't know if you agree, but, like, that's where sometimes these shows feel a little overbooked, where it's like, instead of a big moment like that, she's had that belt for 2 years, she's never lost, instead of having it feel like a big moment that's celebrated on TV and it gets a moment to breathe, it's just like, all right, this happened, we're right on to the next thing because we have 800 things we have to do on this show.
Yeah, it's one of those moments, too, where they should have come back to it later in the show at some point, like, really played that up, because it, like we're saying, like, that went on for 2 years. You can, like, have Renee Paquette, like, try to interview Jade or somebody and, you know, just, like, go over that again. Like, hey, this was this huge thing that happened earlier tonight. But, yeah, they just moved on to the next thing.
Well, they didn't cover it in the scrum either. So it was, like, just passed over, like, whatever, you know. So that's why I had to say something, because I wasn't sure why they did that. So my next thing is, I don't even want to talk about this, but it just, to me, it's just, I'm confused. The Juice. I don't know what they're doing with Orange Cassidy. Like, I don't know if it's, like, Tony's, like, dog and he just wants a toy. I don't understand. Like, there were so many big guys who, you know what I'm saying? Like, every week he's starting and it's just like, what? It's like, this guy, like, Superman, like, what? What at the end of the day, I mean, is he just going to take MJF's belt and now it's going to make Tony happy? I don't understand. Like, this guy's indestructible. Like, we want wrestling. We don't need, like, more comedy stuff. Like, it's fun sometimes, but at the end of the day, come on, you know what I'm saying? It's getting a little old with him.
I don't disagree, but I was never into the character to begin with. I don't see. I mean, it just doesn't look believable to me. I think you're trying to sell credible athletic fighting. I mean, that's even though it's what you're trying to sell, it's what it's supposed to be. And he just doesn't seem like he fits in the same on the same show opposite guys like Cesaro. And look, credit MJF. MJF has evolved himself into one of those guys that feels credible. It's just, it doesn't feel like it's a fight with him. It feels like you said, it's not Santino Marella comedy, but like it still get that haha, those haha moments. Even though I thought the end of the Battle Royal, Andrew, I don't know if you agree, the end of the Battle Royal was really good. Like when they got down to the final four guys,
yep.
Honestly, like in terms of execution, Battle Royals are usually terrible. So in terms of just execution on how they've manage that finish, that was really good. I just think you're better off going with somebody else in that spot. Like, I don't even know who it is. I hate the name Big Bill. I think it's a dumb name, but I mean, he looks like he's a monster. I mean,
yeah.
Even the way he was eliminated just didn't kind of seem like they had to come up with an excuse on how this guy would get knocked out of the ring. Cause they had to come up with a wonky way for it to happen because I think even Tony knew and the agents knew, like, okay, when it's these four guys left in the ring, no one's going to believe anything other than him killing the other three unless we do something stupid. So they had to do some sort of stupid thing to get him out because it didn't look believable any other way.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up because I was going to bring this up at some point tonight, just like a random thing, but I was going to be like, Mike, are you as tired of Orange Cassidy as I am? So glad this came up. I say this, I've said this a few times, like when I watch WWE, I'm sick of The Miz. I'm sick of Seth Rollins. I'm sick of Dolph Ziggler because I've seen him 500 times. I was going to say Orange Cassidy is becoming the first person in AEW I'm just getting tired of. And if you compare him to, say, like the Four Pillars, they've at least like changed their act a little or like had serious storylines at some point. Orange Cassidy is not. He's the exact same character as 4 years ago. He dresses the same. He does all the same moves. He does all the same comedy spots. And I've seen it 100 times now. And I'm just tired of it. He's getting like great. If I'm Tony Khan, I'm not firing him because he's super over. But like, man, he is. I'm like, when he opens this show, I'm just like bored immediately. I'm like, ugh, if I didn't cover this, I would probably tune out and tune back in 15 minutes.
It's been, I mean, it's 3 years of him putting his hands in his pockets. Like,
Okay. Like, I get the joke. It's played out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we were doing this before COVID. Like, he was putting his hands in his pockets. Okay.
Yeah. He needs a new chapter.
Yeah. Anything else, DJ?
Yeah. My last thing is the MJF thing. At the end of the day, I just feel like how he's acting, what he's doing. I don't know if he's waiting for Punk or, you know, this is going to give him a long title. I'm not sure what they're really going to end up doing with MJF at the end of the day because how he acts and how he works, he's a good wrestler, but who at the end of the day, if it's not Punk, can really, you know, there's really nobody that they're really pushing that catches my eye.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's weird because, you know, Omega was is in kind of a grouped feud, and so is Danielson, obviously, so is Moxley. Like, they're all kind of against each other, but as part of a group. Maybe Adam Cole. It does seem like they're kind of getting him ready for something with the win over Jericho. I don't know if Cole's a guy that's going to take the title off of MJF. I don't think that's going to happen, but it does seem like he's being groomed as a challenger. Yeah, I also think, I mean, right now, if you were to ask me who's the one guy that you should take the title off of MJF, I'd probably go with Punk, only because Punk, you know, has had two title reigns here that have both gotten interrupted by injury. So they haven't really done the Punk title reign yet. So, you know, my guess is that when he does lose it, assuming that Punk is still in the company. He probably drops it to Punk. Andrew, do you agree, or do you think there's somebody else?
I guess you could do Omega in a few months. Once that feud with Takeshita is wrapped up, you could do Hangman maybe after that if he catches on again. I don't think Cole's at the level where he needs to be to be champion right now. Like that, this feud with Jericho just seems kind of lukewarm. So, I don't know who else is like standing out like babyface wise who could be in that role. I would go Hangman maybe if he catches on again.
I mean, you could do something with Wardlow. I mean, Wardlow's got the TNT title right now, but you could do something with Wardlow again. They never really did. They had the big match a year ago, MJF and Wardlow, but they never reconnected after that. You know, they've been their separate ways now for over a year, and they forgot about Wardlow after he got that win over MJF. But, I mean, that could be something where, you know, Wardlow, they work something out there because MJF is champion, but he wants to get the win that he wasn't able to get, you know, before over Wardlow and or something. You could tell that story. But again, like I don't see Wardlow being the one to take a title off of MJF. I think they're going to work themselves into a Cole MJF match, but I don't think Cole's got to do it either. So if there's one guy right now, it does feel like it's Punk if it's anybody. But I mean, maybe Tony has no plans of taking the title off of anybody or taking the title off of MJF anytime soon.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I would guess he's going to hold on to the title for like 6 more months until somebody else seems more obvious.
Yeah, I think he'll still be the champion when they go to Wembley, for example.
Yeah, I think so too.
Anything else, DJ?
I'm going to say this voice funny though. Tony Khan was talking to Bill Goldberg. You don't think Bill is going to come in and do something crazy, right?
I don't think he wins the title. Will Tony bring him in? I could see Tony bringing him in just because he's a fan of that era of wrestling. I mean, he was a fan of that era of ECW for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think he may do something, especially where you've got this other show to sell. It's got Nitro colors. Bill Goldberg was a very big star on Nitro, even if it's just some sort of appearance. Like, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he showed up on TV.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I mean, I don't think they'll push him. I don't see him facing like MJF, but they might just do like a mid-card heel, like when he fought like Dolph Ziggler, like a QT Marshall type, somebody he could just squash.
You know who the role he could fill, honestly, and it won't be with Darby, but he could be the news. He could fill in for Sting, because Sting's kind of wrapping up, right? We're not going to see Sting anymore, but that Sting would come in and kind of work 2 or 3 matches a year. He was kind of partner with somebody else. It was young. Maybe you pair up Wardlow with Goldberg and Goldberg's mentoring Wardlow or something like that. Like, and they maybe have matches together every once in a while. Like, I could see him kind of filling the Sting spot.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Sting doesn't seem like he's going to be in it, you know?
I don't know that many people. Like, I just don't feel Goldberg should be somebody in there. I feel like if anybody, they should bring up somebody from, you know, inside, you know. They don't need anybody else to come in and just take the belt away. That's what I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think they do either, but I mean, well, Tony's not afraid to sign guys. So like, I think if Goldberg's willing to come in, my guess is that Tony will want to use him.
We'll
but yeah, as far as putting a belt on him, I don't think they need to do that, and I don't think they should.
No, definitely not, yeah.
I guess that's it, I guess. Hopefully we'll see what happens Wednesday. I just hope that, I just really, really, really hope that the first show on Saturday is not, you know, the juice is going to be, you know, the first match show. We'll see. You know?
Yeah.
Same.
I'm hoping too.
Sounds good. Thanks for the call.
I'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thanks. Yeah, it could be. Although, I mean, I would imagine now that it's in the United Center, it's going to be Punk that will open that show. But you never know. Could be Orange Cassidy.
I mean, if Punk, like, throws another tantrum with it, it's got to open the show with something, so.
Yeah, I really wonder, speaking of Punk, and then we'll get back on Double or Nothing. People are probably sick of hearing us talk about CM Punk, and this was definitely a topic last week. Now, okay, they've announced it's the United Center, which means they've got Punk on board. Something happened there. Nobody knows really what the story is. Everyone's speculating that it had to do with Ace Steel being rehired but not being working, you know, the live shows, and instead he's going to be working remote or whatever. It was interesting. The whole thing was interesting to me. You know, Punk playing hardball with something, even if it was Ace Steel.
Yeah.
It felt like it was Punk, because it seemed like such a minor, trivial thing. It felt to me like it was Punk trying to test the limit. You know, how far can I go before Tony pushes back? You know, how much is Tony going to just do what I want to do and agree with me before he pushes back? And the whole thing, whether it was from Punk's side, whether it was, you know, miscommunication from AEW's side, whatever it is, I don't think it reflected very good on Tony as a manager, which a lot of these things that have happened backstage don't reflect well on Tony as a manager, because it seems like, you know, someone needs to be in charge. So many of these little things come up and it feels like they're a captainless ship, or that the captain, instead of being the captain, is telling all the crew who has all, you know, the crew may have 27 different ideas on how they're going to get to the destination, and he says okay to all of them and agrees to use all of their ideas. Meanwhile, you know, the boat's going to end up, you know, I don't know, striking land somewhere else where it's not supposed to. Like, the captain is not being the captain. Like, at some point, he needs to be the boss, and it seems like he has a very hard time doing that.
Yeah, that was a really odd one, and Tony definitely should have known that, you know, like, hey, do we have you locked in? Can we put you on this press release sort of thing? And at the same time, it didn't sound good for Punk, because, like, what – we don't know the full story, but it sounded like he basically was like, oh, Ace Steel can't go on the road? Like, well, then I'm not showing up, which to me is ridiculous from Punk's standpoint, because, like, if you bite somebody and you keep your job, that's amazing. Like, Steel should not be there at all, probably. But if that was, like, you know, Punk – saying, hey, if he can't come with, I'm not going to do this, then that looked bad on him, too. So it was just another, like, unfortunate incident between them two. But, yeah, it should have 100% been figured out before they were, like, ready to put a press release out.
And I don't think this is exclusive to Punk either. I think it's just another example of my opinion here. The wrestlers don't have a lot of respect for their boss. They don't view him as a boss. They don't view him as someone that they need to look. I'm not saying that you need to rule and, you know, with intimidation and strike fear into your employees, but like, I don't think they fear Tony Khan at all. I think they think that they have control in the situation over Tony, and maybe Tony will change that. And it's not just Punk. Like, there's examples with other guys too, where it's like the MJF stuff from a year ago when he just no shows an appearance. Like, it just seems like they don't have a lot of respect for Tony as the boss. And I think it's because he doesn't really exude that very much. He wants to be their friends. He doesn't want to be their boss. And there's a very big difference there. You can be both, but at the end of the day, boss trumps friend. And I think, you know, it strikes me as like, he wants to be buddies with everybody and doesn't want to all necessarily make the hard decisions or do the hard things when it's necessary, and a lot of guys have, at this point, 4 years into this project, have seen that and will take advantage of that whenever possible.
Yeah, he seems like very non-confrontational, because I guess we have seen people kind of disappear for a bit due to them essentially complaining. You know, like Miro, Andrade, they just like go away, but it doesn't sound like he ever confronts them and it's like, hey, because he complained, you're not going to be on TV for a couple months. It seems like he just, like, ignores them, and then they eventually come back. But, yeah, we have seen that time and time again, too. Like, we talked about it recently, too, like, where Brandon Cutler was even throwing some fire into the Punk situation, and we were just get rid of him at this point, or he needs to be suspended.
Like, you would think when all that stuff was happening, there would have been a, hey, nobody talks about this, everybody shut up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was. But then guys were breaking it left and right, and what happened to them? Nothing.
far as we know, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of someone being the boss backstage, and I think it's reared its ugly head a couple of times. And now, like, did you see the speaking of Collision? Did you see the comment that Tony made in the media scrum last night that there is no new Warner Brothers deal?
That's interesting.
It's just tacked on for the same deal they had. All these rumors of like $1 billion, like, apparently is not true, at least not yet, because they haven't announced anything. And Tony said, as of right now, there is no new deal. So this is just kind of an add-on, which is interesting in a couple of different ways. A, they have not been renewed yet. So that's a big, big looming question here. What's going on? Second, like, when it comes to Collision, is this just like a trial run? If they haven't done a new deal yet and this show doesn't do well, when they renew, is this show going to be canceled and it's going to have like a 3-month run? Because their TV deal's up, I think, at the end of the year. So I assume they're working on a new television deal. Maybe it's just not final yet. But I was a little surprised to hear Tony say, like, admit there is no new deal, at least not at this point. We signed to do Collision for the remainder of our current deal, which does not have a lot of time left on it.
Yeah, I mean, that throws things just into chaos, because it's like, we know we were talking about this and we didn't like the idea of a Saturday show, but it's like, hey, if you're getting $200 million a year, I get it. Like, that's going to secure your company's future for years, make you a major player, more so than ever. But if you're not getting that crazy amount of money, you're just overexposing your product. And as we see, you're not selling a ton of tickets. And if you're going to have like a half full arena and only 300 or 400,000 people are going to watch, you're just damaging your brand. So unless Tony's like incredibly confident, like, hey, I'm going to get really good ratings, and then they're going to give us that $200 million. But yeah, it definitely sounds more like a trial than part of this amazing deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like they're not – the TV money is what they're living and dying on at this point. I mean, it's the biggest revenue stream they have. So
yeah,
it's incredibly important, and it doesn't seem like it's finalized yet. So that – I'm not sounding like the alarms here. It's just – it's interesting that everybody was saying, oh, $1 billion, it's a new deal, it's $1 billion, and now here we are, like, because we were supposed to record last week, we were going to talk about it a week ago, here we are 2 weeks later, and nothing. And no one's even talking about that anymore.
Yeah.
No one's talking about the fact that, oh, they actually don't have a new television deal yet. Like, that's a big story. It's their number one revenue stream.
Yeah, it's crazy how stuff like that, like, happens just in the wrestling news sphere. Like, that blew up everywhere, and it was just like, oh, there's nothing to it at the moment. I mean, maybe there was just, like, rumors or a potential, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it sounds like it's not a sure thing at all right now.
Yeah. I had I forget where I heard this from, but I did read or hear on a podcast a conspiracy theory about that billion-dollar report.
I'm in for a conspiracy theory.
This may have been Lance Storm who said this. I'm not 100% sure. I listened to his podcast on the Observer Network. I want to credit Lance. It may not have been Lance, but either way, the conspiracy theory was that report out there of $1 billion television deal was put out into the media as a planted story by WWE.
Oh.
So that when they don't get $1 billion television deal, it seems like a disappointment.
Interesting.
You know, like, it gets out, oh, they're going to sign, it's $1 billion deal, it's a $1 billion deal, and then they re-sign and it's a $600 million deal, and everyone's going, what happened? I thought it was a $1 billion deal.
Yeah.
To kind of diminish what they actually got, which would mean that there is a deal in place, at least one that WWE is aware of,
mm-hmm.
or believes they're aware of, but yeah, I thought that was an interesting one. I was like, huh, you know what, stuff like that happens, so I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't say never.
I wouldn't completely rule it out. I mean, you see, there seems to be some bad blood between, say, like Triple H, Nick Khan, and Tony Khan. So maybe, and I just got finished watching Succession, so you see all these little corporate games being played. So I'm open to it.
Is it recommended? I've not watched Succession.
Oh, it's amazing. It's probably my favorite show since like Breaking Bad, I would say.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a try then.
I mean, it's not like super actiony or anything. And it's more just like, but it, I mean, it, you know, you can also just picture it's like the McMahon family, if nothing else, and get into
yeah.
it.
Yeah. What season are they up to? I mean, I've never watched a single episode. So what season?
They just finished the series just ended after four seasons, so there's only 40 episodes.
Oh, the series just ended. Oh, yeah. 40 episodes. Okay, so that's bingeable then. Especially
yeah.
with the summer coming up. That's like a couple. That's a few weeks, I bet, we get through it.
And Barry is solid as well. That just ended too. So with Bill Harry, I recommend them both.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to check them out. Let's get to a couple of emails about Double or Nothing, and then anything left over from Double or Nothing not included in these emails or in any other callers we get. We'll hit on before we wrap up. Zach in Texas says, fellas, as much as it pains me to say, Double or Nothing was an uneven show. He goes into specifics. But, yes, I would agree. Oh, I mean, we never even really got to this, but overall thoughts on the show. Thumb up, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Somewhere
in the middle.
Thumbs up, but it might be their weakest pay-per-view ever. The last two matches, great. Really enjoyed them. Mm-hmm. It might be their weakest one. What do you think?
Thumbs up-ish.
Sure.
For those
yeah.
same reasons.
Yeah.
Last two matches were great, and I had zero expectation, and I was not interested at all in the world title four-way. Like, I didn't care.
Yeah.
And that match blew me away. So, great job. Great job. Because going into the match, it gets an F on the build for me, because going into the match, I could not have cared less about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the world title match, and I just was like, yep, Guevara doesn't belong in this match. Jungle Boy doesn't. Like, none of these guys belong here. Like, none, except for MJF. Like, this is dumb. It blew me away. Really good job. What the things I didn't like, though, like, it still exists and have existed for a while. Like, okay, so you do the Jericho Adam Cole match. Good angle. Britt comes back. She starts, you know, canning the crap out of Jericho with a cane. And then they announce, okay, now this Wednesday we're going to do the mixed tag. Well, the pay-per-view should be the finish line. I'm sorry. Like, I know you have a television show on Wednesday, but
yeah.
I spent $50 to watch an angle to set up what's going to happen on the free show on Wednesday. Like, no, that means this unsanctioned match should have happened 2 weeks ago on Dynamite, run the same angle, and we're going to do the mixed tag at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Like, you're asking people to spend $50 on these shows. It shouldn't feel like you're paying to watch a go-home show to that Wednesday's Dynamite. And that's an over-exaggeration, because it's really the only example of where that occurred. But, like, it just... Everything on a pay-per-view, when you're asking people to spend money to watch these shows, should be the finale of that angle. Or it can lead into something else, but it should be a serious spinoff. It shouldn't feel like, okay, we're doing this angle on the pay-per-view to set up a free match on TV.
Yeah, and if nothing else, I just wouldn't announce that during the show. Because the people that bought the pay-per-view are going to watch anyways. And like, probably not that many people who are like, I paid $50, I'm not going to watch the free stuff. So you don't have to, like, highlight the fact, like, oh, yeah, the next chapter is coming up. And it was, like, the thing is, like, this, it was a weak finish. The match wasn't that good. So just the fact they're like, we're going to do some more. I'm like,
Yeah, I agree. All right, Zach continues here. He says, the two main events absolutely delivered, and that's what's most important. The Four Pillars match was a barn burner, but the Anarchy in the Arena match, woo boy, that was one of the darndest things I've ever seen. A heel Takeshita is a choice, but I'm here for it. The match between him and Kenny should be a tremendous, and the Blackpool Combat Club having a fifth member opens the door for the Elite to call in Kota Ibushi. Shout out to Tony Schiavone. His commentary was tremendous on this match. Cold cock, the son of a bitch, has to be the line of the night. As for the rest of the show, it was up and down. The Battle Royal was laid out quite well, and the finish had me cackling. Jericho and Cole, once it got past the nonsense with Sabu and the Jericho Appreciation Society, was ultimately kneecapped by being an unsanctioned match on the same card as Anarchy in the Arena. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Yep.
The tag team title match wasn't all that bad until it devolved into the TNA special. Ultimately, FTR won, and now hopefully Team TNA can move on to something other than challenging for the tag titles. The ladder match was fun, but it was hard to get past it being a ladder match for the sake of being a ladder match. The Women's World title match, I'm completely excusing. Jamie Hayter is legit injured, but clearly still wanted to drop the title rather than having another interim championship, which I can respect. This sets up to chase Tony at Wembley when she could win the title back in a real match and get a ridiculous pop. The trio style match was exactly what it needed to be. I love the open house lighting treatment. It makes those matches feel unique. I enjoyed Jade versus Taya. It was easily Jade's most competitive match, even if the ending was a bit abrupt. While I'm super excited that Chris Statlander is back, and I'm genuinely shocked that they had her beat Jade last night, I figured they would have teased it and then built up to it in 2 weeks. I still expect a rematch, though. In the end, I didn't hate this show, but I could have done a few more straight-up matches and a few less stipulations. He has a $5 challenge, which we'll get to in a second. But, yeah, I mean, that's a Tony thing. I think Tony just loves stipulations on pay-per-views. You know, that seems to be his go-to. He does it a lot.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, I was going to say, like, some of it is just, like, it seems to be masking, like, like Jeff Jarrett not being able to probably put on like a great match. So they get into a lot of like nonsense as well. But yeah, it was the, just to like go back a bit, it was like, it's probably the only pay-per-view that I was like, well, that wasn't great. Like usually, even if I'm not excited for the show, I was like, I will be like, yeah, that was still a really good show. This is the first time. And I mean, they still have yet to put on a bad pay-per-view, but this was the weakest, I think, for me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the last two matches were great, but really everything other than that was like, it was okay. Like there were some good moments, you know, Wardlow doing the Sauntaun off the top of the ladder. Yeah, that'll be replayed for a long time. You know, that mm-hmm. might even make the opening of the show, and it'll be replayed in every Wardlow package. But like, I don't know, their pay-per-views have been so good, and that's part of it, I think, as well. Their pay-per-views have been so good that this one felt like a disappointment compared to how good their other ones have been.
Yeah, and I think, like, just the storylines are pretty weak overall heading into this, you know, like the Jarrett one. I mean, when you think of, like, the tag division, I mean, like, that's the best they had for this. It was Jarrett and Lethal challenging FTR. It just seemed like a big step down. And, yeah, like, the trios match, it didn't do that much for me. I don't think the Acclaim, like, really fits into House of Black, like, spookiness. So, I don't know, neither of those did much for me.
Yeah, and I thought, I mean, some of the angles going into the show were okay. I had, again, no interest in the world title match, didn't care, didn't think any of the three were going to beat MJF. So, but the match was really good.
Yeah.
The Anarchy in the Arena match, I'm glad that closed the show because I thought that was the best storyline going into the pay-per-view. And it, you know, delivered in terms of the match and what they did afterwards and what it could be setting up in the future. It just, I don't know, it feels like the booking is struggling. The booking of the last few TVs going into the pay-per-view didn't get me excited to watch the pay-per-view, and it should. I mean, that's kind of the goal, right? And I was watching it anyway because of what we do and everything else, but like, if I didn't do an AEW podcast and I wasn't covering the show and it's like I had other plans. I don't know that I would have been like, hey, you know what? I have to make sure I'm home on Sunday night to watch the pay-per-view. I felt like even going into the show, I felt like one of those where it's like, yeah, well, I'll watch it if I'm home. If I'm not home and I've got other things to do and I'll, you know, watch the highlights at some point or whatever. I'll find out what happened and keep up. Like, it didn't feel like going into the show, I have to plan my day around I'm watching this show tonight, as had been the case with, you know, for example, the first Double or Nothing. Because it's like, I want to see what this – and that's – maybe that's unfair because it's the first one. But, like, I remember being really excited for that show leading up to the first Double or Nothing. And even, like, that day was like, all right, I got this going on, this going on, this going on. I think it was a Saturday was the first one. But I was like, I have to make sure that I'm – done doing what I have to do by this time so I can sit down and watch this show because I want to see what happens. I didn't feel that way going into this one.
No. I think the only match I was genuinely looking forward to was the main event BCC versus the Elite. I think it was the only storyline that just like resonated with me at all. Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking through the card. Like, because everything else, there was like things that were just like so half-assed, like the Battle Royal, like we're saying, like, Orange Cassidy doesn't care. Okay, well, if he doesn't care, I don't care. And just, like, up and down the card, it was just like, this is fine, I guess. But if you would put most of those matches on Dynamite, too, I would have been like, that's fine. No big loss.
Exactly. And I think what it boils down to is just the storytelling's not great. Like,
yeah.
That falls on the booker. Like, that falls on Tony. And that's why he might need someone. And I'm not saying you got to bring in Hollywood writers. Like, that's the reason why WWE has been terrible forever. Yeah. But, like, WWE storytelling recently, even with all those different writers, when it's directed by Triple H, like, it's been decent over the last few months. It's been decent. It hasn't been fantastic. It's not perfect, but it's been decent. And with Tony, it just feels like it all feels very much the same all the time. And I think that is because it's the same guy booking it all the time. Like, there's a reason, even back in the territory days, you know, some guy would book for, okay, this guy would book for a year, and then somebody else would come in, and they change bookers. And it's because after a while, it all starts to feel the same. And I feel like I'm at that point with AEW where even the angles, there's different people involved, but so much of what they do feels exactly the same as something they've already done. And I think it's because, you know, all the ideas are being generated from one guy's brain. I don't think he's got to step away. Just get some help. Get some new influences around you. Get some different ideas flooding in.
And he is bringing in Danielson to help, apparently, with Collision, and I'm assuming, like, Danielson's storyline. So hopefully it at least feels different. And the thing, like, right now is, like, AEW, it's not embarrassing. It's not, like, eye-rollingly awful.
No.
It's just, like, uninspired at the moment. And some cheesy stuff, some good stuff. But it's just mostly fine. Not a ton of excitement.
It feels like it's a bunch of random things that happen. But it doesn't always feel like there's a ton of direction to what's going on.
Yeah. And
sometimes it's almost like it's a little too simple. Like, one guy does one thing and now they're going to have a match and I'm supposed to be invested. You know, it's not as bad as TNA, but the one I keep thinking about is, like, I remember when Mick Foley was in TNA and he was feuding with someone, Abyss maybe, over a picture of Jeremy Borash. Of him and Jeremy Borash. Like, some, I think it was Abyss, ruined the picture of him and Jeremy Borash or something. And it's like, I'm supposed to care, like, that some guy ruined a picture of Mick Foley and Jeremy Borash and now they're going to have a match? Like, I'm supposed to give a shit about that? And
yeah.
It just feels like there's a lot of that with AEW, not to that extent, not that bad, but, like, one little angle happens and now we're supposed to believe these guys are in a rivalry. And it's like, no, but you got to do more than that. Something else has to happen here.
It's like, to me, the coolest thing of, like, last night was that band coming out and, like, playing Wild Thing, and they just, like, would not stop for, like, 10 minutes. In the sense, like, it just felt, like, chaotic and, like, not overly rehearsed and wild, and, like, these big brawls are going on. So more stuff like that and less, like, hokey stuff, like, filling out the rest of the card.
I also think you could have dropped a couple things off the show, too.
Yes.
10 matches, not including the pre-show match. 11
I mean,
matches on the show.
To give him some credit, like, the shows are going, like, an hour less than they used to, but, yeah, I mean...
Thank God.
Oh, yeah, I used to just get so tired by the end of those.
10 matches, if you include Chris Statlander versus Jade Cargill. I mean, it was a match, so if you count that and you count, you know, the Battle Royal and all that stuff, yeah.
And the Hardy, like, yeah, I would have left.
Oh, that's 11 with that. That was a pre-show.
Yeah, did you watch that?
Yep.
Yeah, it was like, I was like, I think it's
I couldn't find it, by the way.
Oh, really? It was on the I just watched it on the Bleacher Report app.
Okay.
The show, but
I didn't realize until afterwards that it was on YouTube. I assume, like, wasn't that on TNT or TBS before? Were they giving them, like, an hour before
the
pay-per-view?
They did, yeah.
Because I went to go look on TNT and TBS, and I was like, oh, I guess they're not doing one. And then it was like with 3 minutes left in the show, I realized they were airing it on YouTube, so I did see it there. I always saw was them hard selling, like, order the pay per view now type of thing.
Yeah, Jeff nearly, like, killed himself doing his whisper in the wind move. He, like, totally biffed it and, like, landed on his head, and just make me like, dude, you should probably not be trying that anymore. But I mean, he might have just been rusty and he'll get better, but it was not good.
Yeah. Yeah. What have we not talked about here? We got one more email we'll get to in a sec. But what have we not talked? Let me go into this quickly here. The tag team match. Do you have any thoughts on the world tag team match with Jarrett and Lethal?
Wasn't very good. I mean, it was fine.
It was fine.
This is like,
that's kind of my takeaway of the pay-per-view. Like, it was fine. It was fine.
But, like, you know, it's like FTR. Like, last year, FTR and the Briscoes were arguably had, like, three of, I don't know, five best matches all year. And now, like, you know, so when FTR's on the show, you're thinking, oh, man, we're going to get a great match. And they haven't delivered lately. And I, you know, blame that probably mostly on their opponents. But, yeah, it was just like Jarrett. You could tell, like, Jarrett probably booked the match because it was just like his TNA days were like 900.
Felt like a TNA match.
And it, yeah, not good. And just, I say, I've said it multiple times, but Sanjay Dutt just annoys the hell out of me. I hate fake laughing in wrestling.
Yeah. Not in a good way.
No.
What are your feelings on Matt Menard?
You know, he does, because for some reason, he does not bother me as much. And maybe that's a blind spot for me.
Okay. No, but that actually makes me happy you said that, because I want to reach through my screen and just punch him in the face. And I can't figure out if it's that he just annoys me and it's not good heat, or if it's like, well, yeah, he's a heel and he's doing his job. And I'm starting to lean towards if I want to jump through my TV screen and strangle him, he's doing a good job. He's a heel. I could do without all the yelling and the screaming and like the making it, but I think now that you say it doesn't bother you, I think I am going to lean towards being a good heel. But it's weird that I can't figure out what type of heat it is. I don't know, like, oh, is it good heel heat and he's doing his job and I want to kill him? Or is it more like, I don't want to see you on my television screen, go away. I know, I think it's good heat.
But, like, when I see Sanjay Dutt come out and do his crappy Jimmy Hart 1980 laugh, hysterically laugh, which is so phony, or, like, Seth Rollins come out and do his cackle, like, I'd want to destroy my TV. Throw it off the roof. Like, and I would say that's not them being good. I would just say they're insanely obnoxious, but
yeah, you don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it. No, get off my TV.
Okay. One more email. Then we'll get to the very important part of the show, the $5 challenges. But Jose from Golden Valley says, according to many headlines, AEW talent don't know why AEW would give Punk another shot. Anyone, including Stevie Wonder, could see it, and it's very simple, because he's over and he draws houses. Life isn't fair. Go take up bowling. At the end of the day, it's money, and it's a money-making business. Instead of obsessing over how many stars Meltzer gives you, focus on your merch sales and increase your value. That was the beauty of TNA, having no draws. If someone pulled something like Punk, they just run the show in front of the same 150 people as they usually do. David Sahadi recently did a sit-down with Ric Flair's carny son-in-law. Ooh. Not a fan of Conrad, Jose. Based off the notes, it's a revealing interview and paints Kevin Dunn as the devil and the piss-poor director.
Oh.
Well, I wouldn't disagree there.
I'm interested now.
Crazy that Kevin, crazy that Kevin Dunn's life goal is to win an Emmy, and John Filippelli, who got Kevin Dunn fired in 1992, went on to win over 100 of them in television production. One of life's side-splitting occurrences.
Never heard that story.
I will be looking that up later. I've been watching 2009 TNA, especially the two-month period before Hogan came in. TNA did this awesome thing in 2009 and completely dropped it when Hogan and Bischoff showed up, where they'd have the wrestler walking through the back and then highlight package profiling them. Not a feud recap, but an individual reel, and then the ring entrance. It made it feel like they were big-time stars. I don't remember that. Do you?
I don't remember that at all.
I like the sound of it, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Lastly, Jose says, Mr. Socek, I will not tolerate your Mason Ryan blasphemy. Calling him a wannabe Rob Terry. He's your PG answer, Mike, or else Jason Powell will pull sponsorship of the show, BF. Mason Ryan sold out Madison Square Garden, something Rob Terry never did. Hey. Someone said Punk, but it was actually Rob Terry who Mike would leave his wife for. Mason Ryan doesn't deserve to be besmirched in order for you guys to worship Big Rob as Mother Teresa.
It's not so much that I'm dunking on Mason Ryan. It's just that, you know, we're here to celebrate the greatness that is Rob Terry.
Like, all day, every day.
I would gladly be the poor man's Rob Terry. That would be a compliment.
I agree.
Because at least I'm being compared to Rob Terry.
Exactly. Andrew, anything else on Double or Nothing that you wanted to hit on before we move on?
No, not at this point in time, no.
Then it's time for just one thing. I love that song. I love that song. Let's go to Zach's first. Zach says, okay, I was going to keep the famous first theme going, but then I looked at the calendar and realized that this past Saturday was the 27th anniversary of Scott Hall showing up on Nitro. In honor of that iconic moment, I decided to test your knowledge on the May 27th, 1996 edition of WCW Monday Nitro.
Oh, boy.
Number one, what state did the show originate from? Bonus point if you can name the city. Another bonus point if you can name the arena. The state that that show originated from. I have no idea, but I'm going to guess somewhere in the South.
Yeah, I was just going to guess like Georgia, but...
Georgia works for me. Yeah, I was going to say Georgia or Florida. I mean,
yeah,
they were in that region all the time. So
yeah, those are my two guesses, yeah.
Let's go Georgia.
Okay.
Number two, what major change occurred on this episode? So I don't know if this is what he means. I don't know if this is what he means, but having rewatched this, when I got to the point where I was in my Raw lookbacks, where I was getting into 1996, I did watch a few Nitros from like the same date to match up what was going on.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch this. I did watch this whole episode. However, I was doing other things. So like it was on in the background. This is probably, I don't know, a few months ago. And I am almost positive they kept talking about how this was the first Nitro that had expanded to 2 hours.
Oh, I bet that's
so. I mean, what major change occurred? I mean, that if it's like a production change, that would be a major change. So I think we should go with that.
Yeah, I like that.
Scott Hall interrupted a match between the Mauler and whom?
Mike Enos, or was Mike Enos the Mauler?
I don't know. I just remember the Mauler being in the match. I don't know who he was against.
I think it was Mike Enos, unless he was like Mike Enos was the Mauler, but I think
it's Enos. All I remember, because the clip I've seen 100 times, I'm sure other people have too, is like Zbyszko going. You hear Hair Shivani going like, "Well, what is that? Who is that? What are we seeing here?" And you hear Zbyszko go, "Well, we're seeing the Mauler just maul his opponent."
We're seeing the Mauler, the New World Odor.
Yeah, and then Shivani's like, no, wait, who's that? Number four, who did the Giant defend the WCW World title against on this show?
Complete guess, but I'm just thinking Ric Flair, because I know they fought TV ones in like at some point.
Makes sense. I mean, May of 96, makes sense. Hogan wasn't around, I don't think, because he was doing like that. Because he came back at Bash at the Beach.
Yeah.
For the turn. I think that was his return. So.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right. Number five, what was the main event? Bonus point if you can say how it ended. So I guess, I would have guessed the main event was the world title match, but I guess not. I don't even know. I have no idea. The main event.
Randy Savage versus... I don't know. Kevin Sullivan? Probably not.
<Yeah. laughs> Good guess, though. All right. What state did the show originate from? Georgia. You're correct. Macon, Georgia. The Macon Coliseum. It's a good guess there. Nitro expanded to 2 hours. Was the major change that occurred there? So we're 2 for 2. Scott Hall. Who was he? Interrupted a match between the Mauler and who? We had Mike Enos. It was Steve Dahl.
Gosh dang it. I feel like that's like iconic wrestling trivia, I should know.
Yeah. I feel like I should know that too. The Giant interrupted a match between... I'm sorry, the Giant defended the world title against who? We had Ric Flair. It was the Shark. The Shark.
Oh.
Is that John Tenta?
That was John Tenta.
Okay.
Oh, what? Okay, Mike Enos was the Mauler.
Mike Enos was the Mauler?
The Mauler, Mike Enos, yeah.
I'm surprised you knew that. I think I'm going to give you half a point on that.
He's a proud Minnesotan, so.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
The main event was not Savage versus Kevin Sullivan. I know that was a total guess on our part. It was Scott Steiner versus Sting. And the bonus point, how did the match end? It ended in a double DQ when Lex Luger and Rick Steiner both interfered.
Oh, I mean, like 98% of those ended in nonsense for those Nitro main
most
events.
Most Nitro main events ended in DQs or run-ins. Okay, so 2 out of 5. Let's see if we can do better on Jose's. Jose's got a famous first one here. And he says, my last attempt to shut you guys out. Hopefully Mike's wife and Andrew's weird taste doesn't spoil my attempt here. Mainstream media intermingling with pro wrestling. Number one, he's going for the shutout here. He wants to shut us out.
Oh, dang.
What former tag team champion had an uncredited role in the 2010 film The Other Guys?
Oh, I've not seen The
Other
Guys.
I know the film. It's Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell,
The Rock is in that movie.
The tag team
briefly at the beginning. The Rock is briefly in the movie at the very beginning.
Is he credited?
He was like, he must have been credited. I mean, he had a really fairly big role in the first part of the movie, along with Samuel L. Jackson.
Because otherwise, he's really messing with us if he's like defining him as tag team champion and like not listing anything else that he was.
Yeah, I can't. I don't think it's The Rock because he had to have been credited. But okay, hold on. Let's play this out here.
Okay.
I don't think it's The Rock, but The Rock probably got this guy the job in the movie. If The Rock was in the movie. So, who's a former tag team champion that may have had a small role in this film that I don't remember, but may have gotten the role because he's friends with The Rock? Do you know what I mean?
Maybe? I'm trying to think of, like, tag team champs around that time.
Ron Simmons? It could be Ron Simmons.
Was he a take? Oh, with APA.
With APA.
And they were in the Nation together.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm fine with that.
All right, what's wrong?
I bet it's going to be somebody lame, like one of the Highlanders. No offense to the Highlanders.
Number two, Candace Michelle had a racy love scene in what HBO series?
I'm
no idea.
What's that one with Thomas Jane called? Was it? He was like a gigolo, so maybe it was that. I can't think of what that show was called.
I have no clue. This is probably early 2000s. I'm assuming Candace Michelle was like 2003, 2004, somewhere in there. And other than The Sopranos, I was not watching any HBO series.
Yeah, I've seen all of that, but I don't
think she was in there.
I think she was. 6 Feet Under was on at that time. Oz was.
Although, I mean, I guess I could see her maybe being like, being like a stripper or something that Tony gets together with.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, it's the only one I can think. It's the only series from that time period that I can even think of. Number three, what former world champion had a small cameo in Sharknado 4?
What former world champ did he say?
Former world champion had a small cameo in Sharknado 4.
Maybe he will shut us off. I was thinking of like John Cena. Or Kurt Angle did a lot of crap like that too.
Let's go. I like Angle. Let's go Angle. Number four, what former WWE star played the corpse on the FX series Better Things?
Wow. I've only seen the pilot. Who would make a good corpse? Did they have a title or did you just say what former WWE
star? Former WWE star. Former WWE star, that's it.
Played the corpse. Oh, this is tough.
I don't even know. I'd be guessing. I'll guess like Fandango. I don't even know.
Oh, yeah, let's go with Fandango.
Fandango. Fandango, okay. Number five, Mike, in a snotty and annoyed tone, answered this right a few months ago. CM Punk appeared three times on Talking Dead. Who were the three celebs that appeared alongside him?
Wow. Unreal.
I mean, I'd be taking total guesses. I have no idea.
I mean, we're kind of like, I guess, three D-list celebrities.
So, yeah, I was going to say, let's have fun picking three celebrities that appeared alongside CM Punk.
Do you think Carrot Top was on there?
Oh, I do now. Carrot Top. Okay, Carrot Top. I like that. That's a good one. That's a definite fit.
Yeah.
What about the guy who plays Screech? I know he's dead, but was he on the show before he died?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Dustin Diamond.
What about Emmanuel Lewis from Webster?
I'm putting that down just because I'm picturing it now.
I think he was a big fan, yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's see. Number one, what former tag team champion had an uncredited role in the 2010 film The Other Guys? We had Ron Simmons. We were incorrect. The correct answer was Kip James.
Oh.
Daddy ass.
Oh, okay.
Number two, Candace Michelle had a racy love scene in what HBO series? We had The Sopranos. We're 0 for 2. I've never heard of this HBO series. The Hotel Erotica.
Oh, okay. That was not the other one I was thinking of. No, I've never heard of that one.
Does seem like a racy love scene would fit, though, on a show with that name.
Hotel Erotica.
what former world champion had a small cameo in Sharknado 4? We had Kurt Angle. I thought this was a very good guess. Seth Rollins is the correct answer.
Ugh.
What former WWE star played the corpse on the FX series Better Things? We had Fandango. The correct answer was Aaron Stevens.
Oh, okay. He does stuff like that. He's in the new season of I Think You Should Leave. I saw him in the trailer for that.
Oh, I've seen him bounce around in a couple of trailers here recently, too.
Yeah.
Okay, number five. CM Punk appeared on Talking Dead with what three other celebrities? We had Carrot Top, Dustin Diamond, and Emmanuel Lewis. The correct answers. Yvette Nicole Brown.
I was literally going to guess her.
No way.
Yes, she's on Community. She does so many random things like that. Dang it.
Okay. Melissa McBride. And Tyler James Williams.
Don't know who that is.
Neither do I. But I do know that means Jose got his shutout. He pitched his shutout. He got us.
I wanted to get – we would have got a third of a point. I would have.
We would have got a third of a point, yes.
But I thought it was Emmanuel Lewis. He's just an icon, so.
I can see why. All right. Andrew, that's all I got. Is there anything else you think we need to discuss or go over?
Well, I got five questions for you if you've got it in you.
Ooh, I do.
Actually, I'm going to ask you a sixth question too, wrestling related. But so I have my Sling TV up, and Cody. Well, actually, my Sling TV app froze, so Cody Rhodes is just like frozen on my screen. but do you think it's lame when he starts out every promo with "So what do you guys want to talk about?"
Oh, of course it is. Yeah.
Like I thought it worked when he did it like the first couple times.
Yes.
But like that shouldn't be a thing.
You shouldn't do it every promo. It's not something you do every time.
No. Okay. Just wondering if it was just me.
Nope, not just you.
All right. Now we will get to the other five questions. This is the $5 challenge. You get them all right. I will give you $5, and you will be – that'll take five of the $400 you spent on your bet bill.
There you go. This is how I'm going to finance it. Imagine if I had to spend $1,800. We'd be doing this show until we're into our 80s because I'd have that bill to pay off.
Every single time. So I wrote these like 2 weeks ago, and I did it kind of like around Collision being announced. So in honor of Collision, we are going to – the theme is WCW Thunder, which is
– Oh, I like it.
Yeah. Thunder questions tonight. Here we
go. I like where you're going with that.
Okay, so Brian Pillman versus Jushin Thunder Liger was famously the first Nitro match ever. What was the first Thunder match?
So I don't, I have no idea, but I'm going to guess, and I'm going to give you reasons for my guesses.
Yes.
I remember Thunder, like the initial, I think the initial promos for Thunder, having like the big frozen mountain, I think Glacier was involved in a lot of the promos. So I'm going to say Glacier against Alex Wright.
Glacier versus Alex Wright. In the spirit of that, what do you think was the final Thunder match ever?
Ooh, the final Thunder match.
Yeah, and
if I remember, that got canceled before Nitro, right?
It did, yeah. So Sting versus Ric Flair is the
Flair.
Final. Oh, yeah, who did I say? Sting versus
you said Flair. Yeah, Sting versus Flair was the final Nitro match. I remember that.
So I guess this would have been 3 days before that, maybe.
The final Nitro, the final Thunder match. I'm trying to think of what was going on at that point in time. I'm going to say Scott Steiner against Mike Awesome.
What was it, the Fat Chick Thriller? Is that what he was? And then
At that point he was, yeah.
Question number three, how many times did the world title change hands on Thunder?
I don't recall it ever happening. I'm going to say zero.
Question number four.
Yeah, I don't recall it ever happening.
Question number four, who had the most matches on Thunder?
The most matches on Thunder. Billy Kidman.
And the last question, who did Bret Hart wrestle in a hardcore match on the January 4th, 2000 episode of Thunder, which was the second-to-last match of his full-time career? Well, he had a concussion, unfortunately.
That was the second-to-last match of his career?
Yes. If you don't count all the silly WWE ones where he didn't do anything.
Yeah. I mean, just I think based on the timeline he was there, it was a hardcore match that would make sense. I'm going to say, I'm going to assume it was Terry Funk.
Funkster. All right, are you locked in?
I am locked in.
Do you have a sound effect for it?
Oh, yeah, we're going to pick random ones, right? That's right, I forgot about that. Okay,
that's why I randomly laughed.
Sorry about that. That's my fault. I wasn't sure. So I am locked in.
The fans have totally lost it.
They're excited. The fans have lost it.
They are. Now, I think I probably got zero here because all of those were totally random guesses. So if I did anything better than zero, I'm going to be pretty impressed.
What if I told you that you got two?
No way.
You did.
Okay, so let me guess which two I got. I think I got the fifth one. Was it Bret Hart, Terry Funk?
It was Terry Funk, yes.
Okay, that was a guess, but it was an educated guess based on who was there. And then I think the other one has to be how many times did the title change on Thunder? Zero.
That is incorrect.
Ooh.
Wow.
Run through them because now I'm curious which one I did get correct.
So what was the very first Thunder match ever? You guessed Glacier versus Das Wonder Kid, Alex Wright. It was Randy Savage versus Gentleman Chris Adams.
Okay.
Great. It's a great way. I mean, is Collision going to be able to top that? We'll see.
No.
Yeah, probably not. The final Thunder match ever, you guessed Scott Steiner. Oh, heck, I'm going to give you half a point for this. The final Thunder match ever, you guessed Scott Steiner versus Mike Awesome. It was Scott Steiner and Jeff Jarrett versus Dustin Rhodes in a handicap match.
All right.
Actually, I might give you 0.5 three for that.
A third. Yeah, I get a third of a point.
0.333 repeating. There we go.
To be fair, that's a third.
Yeah. how many times did the world title change hands on Thunder? You guessed zero. It was actually three, and they were all, I'm sure, during He Who Shall Not Be Named era. It was Sid Vicious versus Kevin Nash and Big Ron. Do you remember who Big Ron is?
What a match it was. What a match it was.
The other one was the David Arquette match where he won the title, pinned Eric Bischoff, and then Kevin Nash defeated Scott Steiner and Jeff Jarrett. So none of them were singles matches. They were all who had the most matches in Thunder history? You guessed Billy Kidman, and you are correct. It was Billy Kidman.
That's a total guess. I just figured, okay, Billy Kidman was there forever, and it seemed like – I remember when he was getting that push, he was like later on in his career –
yeah.
Almost that entire push was happening on Thunder. Like, none of those matches were happening on Nitro. They were all happening on Thunder.
It's not even that close either. So Kidman had 77 matches. Booker T had 63. Disco Inferno, 61. Rey Mysterio, 60. Chavo, 58. Conan, 58. So he had the most by 14. and then, yes, it was Bret Hart versus Terry Funk in his second to last match.
So I'm impressed with myself. I'm very happy with that. I know it's not, you know, people aren't usually happy with a 50% on a test, but like I'm thrilled with that. I'm going home with my head held high.
I think that
I'm already home, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you'll walk up the stairs with your head held high.
Yes, yes.
And you can tell your wife and kids that you got the Billy Kidman. I think that one's going to go down in the Hall of Fame history. That was pretty good.
Yeah. It's gonna be the first thing I say. I might go wake them up just to tell them this news. I'm sure they'll be thrilled.
I would if my dad woke me up. I'd be very confused that he knew who Billy Kidman is and how he got into
my
apartment.
You're like, great, yeah. I don't know who that is, Dad. Good night. Go be crazy somewhere else.
Yeah.
Andrew, where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast. We're looking at having some new episodes this summer. So you can check out the other 50-some episodes so far, horror, comedy, silly nonsense, the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can find me on Twitter at Torchic Man. You can email the show, alleliteaftershow@gmail.com. You can also call us on Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 515-605-9340. I hope everybody enjoyed Double or Nothing. Hope everybody enjoyed this show. Probably people enjoyed this show more than Double or Nothing, Andrew, I think.
Oh, 100%. And you got it for free.
For free. Exactly. You have to spend $50 to listen to us. So that's always good. For Andrew, I'm Mike. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.